Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Maybe some nice sunshine this week. Maybe we can get a little rain, because we're actually getting behind on rain. Believe it or not, I'm beginning to see that little yellow streak creep up from the Gulf Coast up along the Delta up into Monroe and Clark counties, which indicates we're in a little bit of a drought situation, beginning to get a little dry for winter. This is a great time for filling up the pockets of water in the pitcher plant bogs and everywhere else in Alabama. This rain this time of year can be important, and we're getting a little behind, so we could probably use a little rain this coming week. I'll tell you, I noticed something else, and it's going to be compounded a bit. And you need to be aware of this. It's going to be compounded by the lack of rain, by the slight dryness we're seeing. The temperatures over the next 2 or 3 weeks are not going to be the kind of temperatures we used to think of when we thought of January and February. Temperatures are going to stay high, relatively warm for this time of year. And that means things, it's amazing. I'm seeing it happen all over the state. It happened like this last year. I'm seeing red buds, and I'm seeing red maples already all across the state. When you see red maples flowering in early January, you got things to worry about. When you see red maples flowering in North Alabama in late January, which is usually the time they start flowering in Mobile, you think, wow, something weird is going on. And it makes me realize, you know, this is important. This is important because I'm wrong. I've been wrong. I haven't been wrong. I'm going to be wrong in the future because predicting when you start planting things, predicting how to plant, predicting the best time to put your tomatoes in the ground, or when to start your peas, or when to start your carrots and your other vegetables, or when to... all of these things depend on things happening in a predictable way, or a relatively predictable way. Things vary from year to year. But increasingly, I'm beginning to understand I'm going to have to rethink a whole lot of things. I'm going to have to rethink what is the best time for us to get tomatoes in the ground and how are we going to deal with it. You know, it's an interesting thing. I just have to say it from a gardening perspective, because I want you to be a good gardener. I think we have to recognize that our climate is changing a little bit, maybe a lot. And it's going to change when we do things. And I won't even try to argue with you about why it's happening. That's maybe beside the point right now. The fact of the matter is, it's happening. And it's happening in some fairly quick ways. And so I wanted, as a gardener, and to help you, I want to make sure that we get things planted at the right time. And I've been telling you, based on what I've seen over the looking at the data and looking at gardens and reading about gardens in Mobile and actually gardening in Mobile, looking at what's happened over the past 100, 150 years, I can tell you, well, look, this is how to do it. But the next 100 years, the next 25 years, the next 10 years, I don't think it's going to be the same. It's not going to be quite the same. So we've all got to experiment a little bit. We've all got to look at how do we plant. So there's going to be some temptation. Whether you believe that the climate is changing or not, you're going to respond to these warm conditions that have been occurring now increasingly in spring. And we get these warm-ups in January and February. Things start moving very rapidly, and then, boom, we get this frost in March. Wow, Last year, March was the coldest day, at least in my yard. I think March in Midtown was the coldest day of the year. The coldest day of winter occurred in March. It was remarkable. Weird. And so we have to be prepared for these kinds of changes because it is turning our normal climate patterns a little bit screwy. And they're a little harder to predict. So how are we going to deal with this? Let me talk to you about this. This is important if you're a gardener. You know, I think given the fact that summer continues to heat up and summers are becoming really intense in a lot of ways, and fall is becoming, last fall was really intense. I hope that doesn't continue to occur. But because the heat of midsummer continues to be a problem and continues to expand a little bit, and the rains may be coming a little bit earlier in June than they do normally, the summer rains, we are going to have to continue to think about planting as early in spring as we can. And February, you know what? February is a great time. February is going to be a great time for thinking about, well, gosh, should I put my tomatoes outside? Well, if you got them started early enough, maybe so. But here's the problem, March. And so if we get this late frost in March, which is what's been happening, or in February, and you've responded to these nice warm days by putting your tomatoes out, you could be in trouble unless... And this is one of the things we're going to have to think about is how do we take advantage of these early days, this early warmth, and get them over that last little hump of frost, which we know is almost inevitable it's going to happen. One of the things we're going to have to think about more and more is how to take advantage of climate protection devices. And I don't know what to call them except just a piece of cloth. A wall of water, any little thing that can actually protect your tomatoes and the other things you plant through these last cold spells, because you're going to be tempted to go out. Now, folks, if you want to plant cool season vegetables, you go ahead, because it is the time to do it. You want to put broccoli out, this is the time to do it. You want to put pansies out, boy, this is the time to do it. Your dianthus, even petunias, great time to put petunias out, believe it or not. They like the cooler weather, particularly some of the old-fashioned petunias. They'll do real well. It's a great time to do it. If you have them up from seeds, it's really fun. All these things can be done, but there will be one day, there will be maybe 2 days, maybe 3 days, when it's going to be a little bit too cold for things like tomatoes. Maybe a touch too cold for petunias. And so what we need to do is on those 1 or 2 days, just be ready with a little bit of protection. It's very simple. It could be straw. It could be a piece of cloth. It could be frost cloth. It could be a wall of water for your tomatoes, which can have really wonderful, incredible effects. But these are the things we're going to have to be thinking about more and more. How to nurse our crops through as we get these warm days. And I guarantee you're going to be responding to these warm days soon. Just be cautious and think about what's going to happen. You know, the other day, a friend of mine I thought listened to the show, and read what I said. You know, he said, I've been paying attention to your column. And he said, we talked about tomatoes. He said, you know, I listen to your column. And he said, you know, I do just what you say. I know there's going to be a late frost, so I don't even worry about putting out tomatoes until April. Well, there's a couple of things I know. One is, I know he doesn't put out tomatoes at all. Because if he puts them out in April, they're not going to survive the summer. So, listen to what I'm saying. Tomatoes need to go out early. We can't dodge the frost, because if we do, we run slap into the heat. So we got to figure out how to make this thing work. We got to learn to adapt to these changes that we're beginning to see around us in climate and temperatures, with the drier weather that we've had, the warm temperatures we're going to see over the next 2 or 3 weeks, things are going to be moving, things are going to be popping, and we got to figure out how to take advantage of it without getting ourselves in trouble. It's a little bit of a different climate scenario. Give us a call. We'll talk about it. 251-343-0106. Yeah, I'm getting over a cold. But it's done. Just the lingering effects.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Well, let's get that out of the way as quickly as we can. Excuse the voice. It happens this time of year. It's a recovering voice. But it'll work. It'll do. We'll manage. One of the things, you know, as the climate changes, and it is, understanding our soils is going to be more and more important. In the old days, we had this thing called a soil test, right? And it was a simple soil test, and it was supposedly going to tell you what you needed to do for your soil. And it was cheap, got it for, $5 a sample. And it basically told you nothing that you needed to know about what you needed to do in your yard. One of the problems we're seeing is that as we abuse our soils more, which we do a lot, and particularly as climate warms up all over, we're seeing that organic matter is disappearing from soils at a much higher rate. And Charles Mitchell and the folks at Auburn a number of years ago set to come up with a soil quality index, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that, because you can now do a soil quality index on your yard, and I think that's really important. We're going to talk more about that this week and next week, how to assess whether your soil is really up to what's happening in the climate around you, and whether it's prepared to grow things. Most of the problems in soil aren't the result of, it's not just about lime. It's not just about nitrogen. Look at the other day and thinking, people were driving their trucks across a lawn. Just driving trucks freely across the lawn, and the grass wasn't growing well there. And they said, what kind of nitrogen do I need to add? What kind of fertilizer do I need to add to my grass to make it grow here? And I'm thinking, man, if somebody's running over you all the time with a truck, you don't ask, what kind of steak do I need to feed me to make me feel better? You need somebody to quit running over you, right? Compaction is a big problem in our soils, lack of organic matter. And this new soil test is going to tell you a lot about that and whether or not your soil is too compacted to grow things. We're going to talk a little bit more about that and how to be ready for it. But, Charlie, you tell me there's a caller. I'm listening. Who's calling in there?
Let's say good morning to Kurt.
Kurt, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, hi, Bill. A couple of things. One is kind of a generic question. We have some green banana leaves that grew up in the past several weeks. We thought for sure they were going to get frosted and killed, and they haven't. And I'm just curious thoughts as to why they they might still be doing well and what we can do to continue that with still continue. And we didn't cover them or anything, but just a generic thought on that. And then I wanted to also ask about, we've got some ferns growing on the roof, north face there, doesn't get much sun, and I'm trying to figure out a good way to kill those without causing another problem.
Yeah. So let's, one at a time, let's go to the bananas. The bananas were probably, my suspicion is, if the temperatures in your yard got down to, say, 28 or 29 degrees, so I don't know what temperature it was in your yard in particular.
Sure.
It can vary a lot in Mobile and around Mobile because of the bay and a lot of other factors. But let's say it did get down to 28 or 29 degrees, and the banana leaves, the smaller banana leaves that are coming up out of the ground are surviving pretty well. The reason that would happen is because there were banana leaves maybe they were brown or there was some canopy over it that kept the temperature at that particular place from getting as low. So one of the interesting, important thing to remember is you can change the temperature around a plant dramatically simply by putting a canopy over it, because it traps the ground heat. And so I suspect, and I'm not in your yard and I didn't see it, but if I had to come to a quick conclusion, I suspect there was some sort of canopy over that plant that protected it from the that kept heat loss from occurring and kept that ground heat in and kept it from getting as cold there.
Okay.
So there you go.
Good.
So the roof. Let's talk about the roof for a second. First off, let me ask you, what kind of roof you have? Is it an asphalt roof? Is it a typical asphalt roof? Is it a metal roof? Is it a slate roof?
Asphalt.
Asphalt. So
right.
And it's kind of a good sign that roof is getting older. So just a word of warning. And the fact that it does have growth on it, green growth on it, is probably prematurely aging it. So you'll have to watch that. Do you have a tree canopy over that part of the roof, or is?
And again, it's kind of north facing, so there's not a canopy immediately over, but there's some nearby to where it gets not much sun.
Right. So that's an issue, and sometimes that's something you might want to think about, is just reducing the canopy right where that's occurring. It's probably, and I also, let me ask you one more question. This is important. You call it a fern, but is it a fern or is it a moss? Is it more mossy looking, or does it actually look like a fern?
There are some little sprigs or whatever coming up out of it that are fern. I'm pretty sure it's a fern.
So good. So what we've got is, does it go brown when it dries out? Does the whole thing go brown when it? Yeah. So that's interesting. Probably there is both moss and ferns growing there, which means it's been there for a while. You at this point, you might need to carefully scrape some of that off, because it's probably pretty thick. I don't know of anything, because there's already a soil mat. There's essentially an organic layer that's allowing the ferns to grow. It's not just moss. There's probably an organic layer, so it may need scraping. But bleach works very well against moss. And it basically changes the pH pretty strongly, makes it very difficult for that moss to grow there. And without the moss, I don't think the ferns will survive. But if you have tree ferns, if you have a resurrection fern growing in the moss, it may have roots down into the old roofing just a little bit, and you may need to scrape it some.
Okay.
But the bleach is the solution. Can you get bleach up there? Have you got a sprayer that'll allow bleach to get up there?
Well, possibly. Yeah, I think I could do that. Yep. Just straight bleach, or I know a lot of times people say, well, put bleach and Dawn for, a little bit of Dawn liquid.
Don't make it complicated. Just bleach, because all you really need to do is just change the pH.
Okay.
And I won't go into the chemistry of that, but those mosses basically prefer acidic conditions. And that bleach is changing the pH enough that it makes it difficult for the moss to live. My only concern is that your moss it sounds like your moss might be kind of thick. And so it may need a little bit of mechanical action in addition to the bleach. So just that to think about. But the bleach, once you control the thick parts, the bleach will definitely keep the moss from regrowing. And you might have to apply it, given those conditions, you might have to reapply once every couple of years.
And with scraping, I mean, is it just basically like a trowel or something and just...
You could take a flat shovel up there. Be careful not to scrape your asphalt off, and be careful not to fall off the roof. that's a big thing.
I was going to say, I'm about to turn 65, Bill. I think I can get on that roof, but I don't think I need to anymore.
You might have to find somebody to do it. and I can't see the roof. You know, sometimes you can put a ladder up against the eaves if you don't destroy the eaves, and you right. could take a rake or something like a rake or a garden rake and rake it off. You see what I'm saying? So you wouldn't have to get on the surface. And then get you I would get a good backpack sprayer to spray, because otherwise, yeah, even with a backpack spray, you might have a hard time getting the bleach up there, depending on how high the roof is. But it's going
to
take more than a rake.
And as far as spray goes, am I trying to douse it pretty good in the wherever
Yeah, you know, you're probably going to run about 50-50. You're going to put chlorine in there. You're going to put bleach in there, just a hypochlorite solution, about 50-50 with water, sodium hypochlorite, 50-50 with water. And spray it down pretty good.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to just drip off everywhere, because that's a problem too. But so you
dampen
will need
it
to
pretty
douse
good,
it.
But
yeah,
don't soak
that's right.
it. Is that?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Thank
and,
you.
And if yep, there you go. All right. Interesting thing, this moss on the roof. It's kind of pretty, isn't it? And I like it, but it does deteriorate a roof. Something to think about. We'll be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Great picture from David Hubble of his overwintering melaton sprout in a container. You know, it hasn't been. It's been a tough year for melaton, hasn't it? We've had to dodge a lot of issues. We had that crazy, insane early cold snap, which was just way earlier than anything Mobile usually experiences in October. And then after that, it was just like boom. It was incredibly warm much of the rest of the winter. We've had a few cold days, but not cold. It's interesting. Looking back at the old data, I used to tell folks, well, in the Mobile area, you can expect somewhere between 10, 15, and 30 days of freezing weather a year. That's not many. And it's really easy to dodge those days. And that was based on long-term data. But now, basically, we're looking at 4, 5, 6 days of freezing temperatures. It's just crazy. And that's particularly around Midtown. But the cold days are coming at the worst times. The worst times. They're not coming in the middle of winter. It's staying really warm in the middle of winter for the most part. They're coming at the ends. They're coming at the beginning and the end. I don't want this to be a pattern. I have pretended like it's not going to be a pattern. But you know what? It's becoming a pattern. And it's something we're going to have to think about and deal with. I don't know that it's going to happen every year, but it's happening more often. It's happening enough. It's happening enough that we're going to have to start planning for it and anticipating it, just like we anticipate, just like we've long anticipated or should have anticipated. Some of you had still living in Boston, but if you understand that it's going to get hot, and it's going to get hot the last part of June, and the nights are going to be really hot, and it's going to be really hard to grow tomatoes then, and so we have to anticipate if we want to live in Mobile. How to grow tomatoes? By planting them early. By planting early and getting ready for that. Now we're going to have to think about these late cold snaps and these early cold snaps and all the warm weather in between and how to adapt to it and how to take advantage of it. And it's going to create some special challenges and a lot of interesting thinking. So that's one of the things we do. Hey, help us out here. We had the question of, just to go back to our last segment, we had this question of moss growing on a roof. And how do you deal with that? What's the best way? So if it's really thick, what can you do to get it off? Because just bleach in and of itself is probably not going to remove the organic material. And so there's a chance that things can regrow in that and the ferns can hold on into that. So how do you get it off? There's going to have to be some mechanical action as well as changing the chemistry of your roof so that the moss doesn't grow there, which is what I suggested. That's what the bleach does. The mechanical action, could you use a flat shovel? You could use a – roofing contractors have these little flat things that they use to peel the shingles off. Of course, you want to do it the right way so that it doesn't actually peel the shingle off. High-pressure water can work, and that's something you can use. Maybe you could use pressurized water. That's a thought. It's going to test your roof. You're going to find out if indeed if the flashing works. So be careful about where you apply that high-pressure water. But it will tell you a lot about how well your roof keeps water out. But you can use high-pressure water to remove some of that moss. But you might need to do that in addition to... You see what I'm saying? In addition to the usual bleach. Carolyn Baymanette is saying Baymanette's beautification committee is offering for Arbor Day some really interesting trees. They're really cool trees. Carolina Silverbell. Well, Carolina, that's interesting. Carolina Silverbell does not do that well here. It's an interesting tree for Central Alabama and for North Alabama. There's a bit of confusion there. Carolina Central Silver, we have a silverbell here on the coast. It's coastal silverbell. It's a different silverbell. So if it's two-winged silverbell, if it's Halesia, Halesia, Carol, if it's Halesia diptera, Diptera, if it's coastal silverbell, which is Halesia diptera, it's a great plant. It's a great plant for our yards. If it's Carolina silverbell, it's not so good. It's not so good. I hate to be that way. Catalpa can be really good, and if it's our native catalpa, if it's Catalpa bignonioides and not Catalpa speciosa, it's a great tree for us. It's a really good tree for us. Red maple, if it's our red maple, if it's Drummond red maple, it can be a good tree. I wouldn't put it next to a house, no matter what kind of red maple it is. I'd put it as far away from the house as I could, because it's not a great tree for putting next to a house. And if it's a local red maple, that's fine. If it's a sycamore, if you put it... just make sure you put it as far away from the house as the tree could get tall. And sycamores can get tall, but they always break off in our climate. So make sure that's not within 50 to 75 feet of the house. And tulip poplar is a terrible tree to plant in anybody's yard. Never plant tulip poplar. So do I have any recommendations for Baymanette's Beautification Committee Arbor Day trees? Yes, don't use any of them. Because you don't know. The only one I would use is Catalpa, which I love, but only if it's Catalpa bignonioides. And it's unfortunate. I think we're kind of messed up here because we take recommendations from people in other parts of the country when it comes to planting trees, and we plant the wrong trees, and we get into trouble. But no, it's an interesting list, but not a good list. I would get my trees elsewhere, Carol. And let Baymanette know that, they got to understand where they are. And Carolina Silverbell is not a great tree for Mobile or for Baymanette. Catalpa, only if it's our native Catalpa. The Missouri Catalpa does not do well here. Red maple, only if it's our native red maple. Sycamore, never plant around a house. never, it just doesn't do well with coastal winds. Tulip poplar, never, ever, ever, ever under any circumstances, anywhere near a house or in an urban situation, never plant tulip poplar. There it is. And that's the truth. If anybody from the beautification committee would like to call me and talk about it, I'd love to talk about it, but it's the truth. And these are things that that we need to be thinking about very carefully. John, in Irvington, what are some good flowers to get going for this spring, growing in pots or on a covered front and back porch? I use a mix from A Bloom. Would you add anything to it? Thanks. Well, A Bloom has probably got a pretty good mix, and that's a great thing. It's probably pretty much like the mix that we've been talking about again and again. At least 75% pine bark with some other ingredients. Yeah, as long as it's 75% pine bark, it's going to do just fine. If it's more than 75% pine bark, it's going to do just fine. If it's less than 75%, it's probably going to be a problem. So just ask. Ask the folks at A Bloom, is this 75% pine bark? And they'll probably tell you yes. Or they'll say, well, it's a little more than that, and you'll be fine. You'll be fine with it. It's as good as you can do. What are some good flowers to get going for the spring? At this point, you know, it's probably nasturtiums. Can I just say nasturtiums, John? There is nothing that will give you, that could make any person, in my mind, there's nothing that can make any person any happier than nasturtiums. Now, I'm prejudiced because I love nasturtiums. But there's a reason I love nasturtiums. Can I tell you why? One, they're beautiful. Two, they grow like crazy in the spring. And they have all these leaves. Three, and this is my prejudice, and I just have to say this, you can eat them. They're delicious. I mean, they're incredibly delicious. They're great in salads. The leaves are great in salads. The flowers are beautiful, and they're delicious. They're great in salads. They have this wonderful sweet, sweet peppery quality that's just beautiful. The seeds, nasturtium seeds, are great ground up in a pesto mixed with other things. They're just, it's incredibly versatile and beautiful plant. And they're beautiful. And can I could go on about nasturtiums for a long time because there's so many different kinds of nasturtiums. John, listen to me. There's compact nasturtiums like that stay really small. They're just fine. They're fine. You know, everybody likes compactness. I like the long legging ones. I like the ones that go everywhere. There's these great pictures of Monet's garden at Givenchy. In France, somebody correct my French, please. But it's just, he has these nasturtiums, and they've come out of the beds, and they're just trailing across the paths with all these flowers and all these leaves. It's one of the most beautiful, cool things I've ever seen. You can have nasturtiums growing up trellises if you get the tall nasturtiums. It's really beautiful there. You can have them you can put a pot up on a big stump or something and have them trailing out over the pot and down the stump like some long-haired beauty. It's just, they're incredible nasturtiums. Or you can grow the little compact ones, whatever you want. Nasturtiums are a great thing to start right now. There's a lot of other things that you could be doing, too. If I were going to do marigolds, I'd be starting them right now. It's really not too early even to start cosmos and get your cosmos ready to put out. We're going to be back. We're going to be thinking about these things and what to do and when to do it. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I get to talk about all the things I really enjoy talking about, like how to get nasturtiums. So, John, you said, but they never sprouted. I'll try again this year. Did the seeds go bad? I have some marigold I bought last year, but never opened. Thanks, Kim. John, and another caller who said they can't get nasturtium seeds to germinate. These are important questions, and we'll talk more about it. But it can take a while for nasturtium seeds to germinate. But listen, if you can, if you get, for example, if you get nasturtium seeds from Parks, one of the things I find, and I'm not recommending Parks because they don't have that great a selection, but one of the things they do is they clip their nasturtium seeds. You pay dearly for that. And they clip a little tip off, just a little teeny bit, in that hard nasturtium seed shell, and that makes it imbibe. You know that word. We use it at Mardi Gras. It makes it imbibe water quickly, and it germinates quickly. So the trick is with nasturtium seeds, if you want them to germinate quickly, put them in a big container. Put them in as large a container as you can. I actually use little cloth sacks, which is another thing. We can talk about it later. Put it in put them in as large a container as you can to get them started, because they don't like to be transferred when they're small. But put the seeds in there, nick them, take a little file, take a little fingernail file, and just rub part of that nasturtium seed. Rub a little of the skin off, or take a fingernail clipper and just clip a little piece off, just a little teeny piece, just a little, so that you see that little inner white flesh. You don't have to do it hard. You don't want to do it too hard because you'll damage the seed. Or you could just take a mill file and just do it along the mill file, and that would work too. You do that, those seeds germinate really rapidly. So there's the secret. And it's worth trying it because the nasturtiums are so satisfying. And this is the time to do it. This is the time to get after it. Dan says he's got just the thing to wake up his tomatoes. We're going to talk about that in the next hour. Pink Floyd, why Pink Floyd will help your tomatoes. This will be the subject of my next hour, Dan. Does that make you happy? Good. Got it. Tony, looks like he sent me a picture of a tulip poplar. We're going to talk in the next hour about why tulip poplars are a problem. But we got a caller, and I want to get to him before the break. Dennis, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. A few weeks ago, I exchanged some fruit with my neighbor who lives just a block away. There were some grapefruit and tangerine, and they were just delicious. The difference, though, is I live on the river, and any kind of north wind, it blows diagonally across the river, and so I just get a blast of cold air, and I do have a harder time establishing trees until they get at least a few years growth on them. What's your recommendations as far as tangerine and grapefruit varieties?
Yeah, well, so you've made it a little harder for me by suggesting that you're in an exposed location. Which river are you on there? Which river?
Dog River.
So, the river itself is going to, the nice thing about that river is it's actually going to help to moderate temperatures where you are. So, even though you get that north wind, that's a problem. Protecting the plants from wind, worry less about the temperature and more about the wind in your case. So one of the things you want to do is just, when you get those windy days, protect the trees from wind. And we'll talk about that. I'll talk about that a little bit more in the next hour. But you want to know what to plant. And let me tell you, it's changing. My recommendations are changing because once, you know, I used to say there were things that are kind of marginal here. And they're still a little marginal because of these late and early cold snaps, but we're not getting the real cold temperatures that can do damage. Increasingly, clementines are I think a very good fruit for us to consider. They're not as hardy as satsumas, a little less hardy than satsumas, but in fact, in your situation, I think they're going to do just fine. And the good part is that they hold their quality even if the temperatures don't drop. Satsumas need the temperatures to get a little cooler in fall, but I find that clementines hold their quality better even when the temperatures don't drop in fall, and they're not consistently dropping. Clementines, really important. So there are a lot of different clementines out there. You can, whichever one, Clemenulus is a great one that I, but there are a bunch of them. Clementines. Poncan, P-O-N-K-A-N, is a great fruit for us. The quality of it can be really great some years, and it holds well into winter. P-O-N-K-A-N is a great tree for us. Should be very good for you. I think some of the orange varieties that I used to be reluctant to recommend will do just fine. I still prefer Hamlin. I think Hamlin and Louisiana Sweets are the best orange trees for the Gulf Coast. They really have a high fruit quality, and that fruit quality develops at just the right time. But even if you try Navels and some of the others, the fruit quality develops later in February. You know, where you are on Dog River, you might be okay, particularly as the climate's continuing to warm, because we're going to have these warmer winters that allows those fruits to hang on the trees. Grapefruit varieties, you know, there's a lot of them out there. Marsh, one of the old ones, is called Marsh. It's probably the best grapefruit for us. Grapefruit quality doesn't develop until usually February or March. Okay. So with warmer winters, we might get okay grapefruit quality in February and March when the quality is at its peak. So all of those are really good for us, and that's a good way to get started. Does that help?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about protecting your trees from the cold winds, from the winds, because that is a big problem. As much as the temperature, I think it could be the winds, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Is that good?
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
All right. All right, good, good. So, Tony, let me just say, Tony, you're asking me, he planted this tulip poplar about 3 years ago. It was a sprout from a neighbor in Fairhope. Should I cut it down? Tony, I will tell you yes. And I'm going to just tell you bluntly, yes. And I will come back here very shortly, as soon as we get through with this big news break. And we're going to talk about why you should cut that tulip poplar down as soon as possible.